Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone, episode 53. My name is Kieran Tavam, and as always, I'm joined by my pal JJ Duke over in the United States. JJ, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. You know, fall season is upon us. Got college soccer here stateside that's revving into gear. Final couple weeks of the NWSL. Life is good. This is kind of the best time of the year. And, of course, everybody who enjoys the throw ball version of American football, that also started too.
Yeah, we don't talk about that on this show. But, yes, started last weekend, of course. And you're right, lots going on at the moment. You mentioned their college soccer. Definitely something that we want to cover as the season goes on. It's only a few weeks into the campaign at the moment. Lots of games going on up and down and left to right of the country. But we will have a little look at that maybe in the next few weeks or so when there are a few more talking points. But lots to get through on this show as always, mate. And I think we're going to start with, God, I hate having to start on a negative, but unfortunately the biggest news at the moment is the cancelled friendly match between Denmark and European champions, the Netherlands. We were in for a treat. There was going to be a rematch between the final of Euro 2017, and the game this week was cancelled because the Denmark players did not report for their international camp because they are currently in dispute with the DBU, the Danish Federation. Again, mate, we are talking about players in dispute with a national federation. We've seen it in so many times before. We saw it in your country with the United States and their players. We've seen it in other countries, the likes of Ireland, with the dispute with the FAI. This is getting a little bit boring, isn't it? But again, it's being brought to the forefront.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I know it's negative, and this is what I think the second or third straight show now that we're starting with negative news. I mean, for me, it's progressive in the sense that players are not satisfied in what they're currently being compensated for, if even that, for that matter. So I give the Danish players all the credit in the world because, you know, you get to the finals of, you know, the European Championships, you're really on the cusp of making it to the World Cup, and you want to be fairly, you know, paid for your results. And I think that they have absolutely every right to do it. And it's just disappointing for me, and I know it is for a lot of people out there, that federations maybe do see the final result in the bigger picture, but they're just not budging. And, you know, I don't want to say, and I think I might have even said it a year ago, that that moment you talked about the U.S. in their very long, drawn-out dispute with the federation about getting equal pay was going to be kind of a setting the tone moment for the rest of the world. And I think it is. Unfortunately, just the federations are not, you know, not to say that they're not paying them, but they're not paying them what they're actually worth. And I think it's disappointing that. And hopefully this gets resolved sooner or later, because I know it was put up on our website early, and I know you'll get into this a little bit more. It's not only just this match that has implications. There's kind of a World Cup qualifier right around the corner, and that's the last thing that that country wants to deal with, is a team prepared to not play in a World Cup qualifier.
Yeah, I think what's disappointing is that I would really implore people to go onto the Women's Soccer Zone website, womenssoccerzone.com. Our Danish writer, Katia Krageland, has really broken this down really well. She's not given any opinions. It's very much just reporting the facts. But I think what was the most disappointing thing, mate, is that if you read her article, if you see the quote by Sanni Trollskard, who talks about the potential negotiations, she actually says in a quote in a Danish media outlet that they turned up to this meeting to discuss what they thought would be a collective bargaining agreement. And for the first hour, the DBU were talking about Danish law and employment. Now, one of the things that Katja has spoken about is the Danish Federation are disputing as to whether, when the players are playing for their national team, whether they are the employer of those players, whether the players are essentially employees of the DBU. And they are essentially saying that they are not. And I think what the players are trying to say is, well, look, we're coming to play for your federation, so we are employed by you when we are playing for you. And that seems to be where a lot of the argument centres on. But that's ridiculous, isn't it? Surely if you are representing your country, you are employed by your federation.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, in that respect of trade, you're the front line of that respected trade. So, yeah, they are employees. And I think that kind of it's again, I've taken classes in college before, and honestly, still some of it just truly doesn't make sense to me about, you know, these types of CBAs and different laws that go with it. And you really have to have your head on a true swivel at all times. And this is at times where I deflect and, you know, lean on Jen Gordon's advice, as she's been on the show a few times. You know, she's one that does a good amount of work in breaking some of these things down, because let's face it, I just don't understand what's going on. But I think in the simple status, yeah, I was shocked to read that part, and I appreciate what Katya did in, you know, breaking all that down, the saying that, you know, these players were going in to talk about it, and they were lectured. It almost sounded like they were being lectured on treason to their own country and how they could possibly go to jail for it. And I'm like, they're trying to get paid. You know, this is something that everybody does with their own respective jobs, you know, for the most part, on a not monthly or yearly basis, but every couple of years you're trying to look to get a little bit of an increase. These players, in essence, maybe not to the same extent, really more for that matter, are trying to get a pay increase and more consistent pay, and then they're being interrogated about it. Like, that boggles me.
Yeah, it's so strange, isn't it? And we should stress, this isn't just about pay. This is about elements such as insurance and training facilities and lots of things that come into these collective bargaining agreements. We've got to remember, Denmark have just reached the final of the European Championships. They were one game away from being the champions of Europe. I cannot believe that the first game that they are meant to be playing after that tournament has been cancelled because the Federation are unable to agree what is a fair deal for those individuals. It's just absolutely mind-boggling. But look, as I said, JJ and I could talk about this for a while, but definitely, definitely, definitely go to womenssoccerzone.com, have a read of Katya's piece, because she's done a really good job of breaking it down. On a more positive note, JJ, we did hear this week that in Australia, they do have a new collective bargaining agreement, and there are a lot of positives that come out of that. Do you want to give a little bit of insight into that one?
Yeah, brief insight, and appreciative of Anna Dong, as always, staying on top of everything. Not only keep an eye on her account, but the women's game as well, keeping us up to date with literally everything that's going on in women's football in Australia. But players under a new two-year agreement, kind of give you the bones about it, are guaranteed not fully double the amount of pay that they were from last year, but the minimum of contracts, or the minimum contract, has been increased to 10,000. It's going to be increased even more in the 2018-19 season. The cap is going to be raised a little bit as well, and a few other perks that are going to come into it. And, you know, it's a big opportunity as well, because Australia, they're at the brink, and they've known it for a while. Just for me, I've said it in the past, starting in 2011, they've really come on to the international stage and making themselves known, and continually Australia's being progressive, trying to get the best out of not only their players, but the best out of their own federation. And yeah, this is a big move for them. Also as well in the agreement, larger roster sizes, the increase of the salary cap, commercial framework to continue to grow the game, enhance medical standards, which I know was a big talking point in years past, and also key principles to the first ever formal maternity policy for players, which I think is a big plus in that as well. So, yeah, a lot of good things are coming ahead of the new W League season, which from what I'm understanding is also going to be shown a lot more frequently than in years in past on better media platforms.
Yeah, definitely more access. I spoke to Anne about it a few days ago, and there's going to be a lot more opportunity, I think, to see the games. Whether we outside of Australia will get much of an opportunity, I'm not too sure, but you've got to try and engage your own first, no doubt. And the game is growing in Australia. We've seen, I think they play Brazil in the even next week or the week after. And I think there's quite a number of tickets sold for that one. I think it's going to be a record crowd, or close to a record crowd. And as you mentioned, W League starts, I think, in a month or two. And fixtures for that came out in the last week. I know that there's a repeat of the grand final between Melbourne City and Perth Glory in the opening weekend. You know, Australia is is a growing nation in women's football. The league is developing. We're seeing exciting players go down there from all over the world. They're developing their own as well. We're seeing moves from club to club taking place. I think it's going to be a league to follow, definitely, over the winter months. And when the NWSL finishes, you know, a number of their players will go down there as well. I know that a few are confirmed, but they haven't been announced yet. But it will be really, really interesting to see how they do. So really glad that CBA has been agreed. Nice way to kind of end that segment, mate. But we'll move on. I would normally do breaks, but let's just carry on, mate. Let's just carry on. UEFA Women's Champions League. The last 32 draw was made since our last show. The ties are due to be played the week beginning October the 2nd and the week beginning October the 9th. Once again, my friend, we are talking about Chelsea ladies, and once again we are talking about them drawing the short straw. They've been eliminated early on by Wolfsburg in the last 2 years. This time round, as an unseeded team, which is still really bizarre. I don't know how they're not a seeded club. They drew FC Bayern Munich. Now, if that's not the short straw, I don't know what is.
We have a saying here in America, and it's really universal. They got screwed. I mean, this is bad. You and I have gone in, this is years now, about how UEFA really needs to change the system that they have in terms of this quote-unquote seeding. I know we're still in this realm of playing aggregate home and home series. I still think that there should be groups like the men and then do the round of 16 onward and forward, but it's still home and away. And yeah, how teams from countries that are supposedly top 5, top 10 in the continent and world extended aren't even getting seeded is truly befuddling, mind-boggling, and confusing. I mean, I see Chelsea with a better chance of winning that head-to-head, but that means a good team isn't going to be making to the round of 16.
No, I mean, you're right. I mean, screwed is probably the right term. We would not necessarily use that as frequent over here, but certainly not a term that we're not unused to. But yeah, just how Chelsea can be unseeded is just beyond me. And unfortunately, you have to look at some of the other ties to just see how ridiculous it really is. You look at, I mean, we were talking, weren't we, about PAOK, P-A-O-K of Greece coming up against Sparta Praha. I mean, I have to be honest, Chelsea would probably pull both of those teams apart. You know, they would really give them a bit of a hammering. I know that's really disrespectful. I apologise for any individuals who are supporters of those two clubs, but we're just saying it as it is. You know, you look at some of the other games, it's just, yeah, I mean, I look at it and I think Chelsea would probably win quite a lot of the ties, but, you know, they are where they are. I mean, you've got Brescia who are seeded because they've obviously been in the Champions League for a number of years. They've drawn debutants Ajax. I'm looking forward to that one, actually, mate. I think that'll be an interesting one.
Sneaky, very sneaky good.
Yeah, I think it is, because Ajax are a team who are starting to invest in their women's club, and I think that they could, not necessarily this year, but I think they're a team to keep an eye on. You know, they've displaced FC 20 in the competition, who have obviously been in the Champions League for a number of years. They are not in it this year. I like Wolfsburg against Atletico Madrid. I will say that Atletico are not in the same league as Barcelona, despite the fact they won the La Liga last year. Barcelona have strengthened. Atletico have lost a few players since they won the competition in Spain. Wolfsburg, we know about their strengths. They will no doubt, you know, continue on into the later rounds. Another one I like, mate, Fiorentina against Fortuna Hiorin. You know, Fiorentina making their debut. You know, they've got some interesting players. Actually, Ellie Brazil, who played for Birmingham City Ladies, has just joined Fiorentina. So I'm interested to see how she does out there, because, you know, Serie A with Juventus, who are putting up some pretty big numbers. I will say this, the Italian league has started, and I saw a couple of Italian cup results as well. I think Juventus beat Torino by double figures over two legs. It was pretty one-sided, and the Italian Serie A is starting to invest in some of its teams. I mean, I'm interested, mate, what your views are on the draw, whether there's any games that stand out for you.
Well, I mean, we talked about, you know, some of these matchups that could go really either way. You mentioned the Fiorentina Hiorin. I think that the Montpellier Zvezda match might be a bit of a litmus test for Montpellier. I know, obviously, among many clubs, they're ones that have been investing in their teams and adding a couple of quality players into their side. That should be one that they'll go through, but it's a challenge to travel home and away to Russia, so it'll be interesting to watch. Vodnes, Barcelona. I think similar here for Barcelona, right? Litmus test against Vodnes, who... treading in the water. They're a team that has been here before. They could hold their own, but Barcelona, this will be their first real test. I think it'll be something to keep an eye on. And then Manchester City, I think they drew a comfortable match against St. Pulten. I think that's about it. I mean, again, like we said, there's a few that probably they would be first round matches because they're pretty even run of the mill draw. I just wish in the future that we can find a system. I know, again, as you said, and I agree with it's, we're trying not to be insulting to nations, but yeah, Ginča from Lithuania. I mean, that's a pretty good draw for them when you're getting Zurich, you know, that should be a matchup that they should be getting Bayern Munich, you know, but, we get to be the ones that talk about it for months. They're the ones that have to go play the matches.
Well, interesting you mentioned Zurich there. They actually came through the qualifying round. There's obviously a big qualifying round that takes place before the last 32. If Zurich hadn't got through, Chelsea would have been seeded. If they had slipped up in qualifying, Chelsea were the highest unseeded club. If Zurich had not gone through, Chelsea would have been in the seeded group. So you're right, it's kind of bizarre that they had to go through qualifying and then they find themselves in the seeded pot. I mean, there are issues, aren't there? I mean, it's through no fault of their own, but you have to look at, I mean, you mentioned the Montpellier game. I mean, that is a hell of a trek for them to go to Russia. I know that Sabrine Delanoir, former PSG defender, I was talking about the trek that Glasgow City have got to make to Kazakhstan to play Kazakhstan. Now, Glasgow City, no affiliation with a men's club, very much an independently run women's football team, not huge budgets. I mean, we're talking about a massive round trip. I think it's about a 10-hour flight, and that's for a direct flight, and I can almost guarantee that they will look for the cheapest option to try and get over there. So those players could be doing a lot of travelling. And Montpellier have got to go to Russia as well. You know, that is a hell of a trek for them to Zvezda. It's just, there needs to be a bit more support for some of the teams. Montpellier have the association with the men's club. They have a big budget. I'm sure that they will be fine with the travel to Zvezda. Glasgow City, I can almost guarantee, with the trip to Kazakhstan, they're going to operate at a loss. They are not going to make the money back from competing in that tie from travelling over there. And the same for Kazakhstan as well. Let's not forget about them. They've got to come over to Glasgow. It's difficult, isn't it? To be fair, whoever Kazakhstan draw, it's going to be a mission, isn't it? Unless it's probably Zvezda. They have got a hell of a journey for them. So it's difficult, isn't it? But I don't know how the clubs are making money out of those draws, because that is a hell of a journey that they've got to make. We haven't even mentioned the champions, mate. Lyon. They've got to go to Poland to play in Medic Konin. That will be... Is straightforward a polite term to use?
I mean, I was going to be setting an over-under at 20 for the two legs. But, yeah, I think straightforward, that probably works the best.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. Linköping against Apollon Limassol. Actually, that's an interesting one, mate, because Apollon Limassol have a few ex-NWSL members, I believe. They have Libby Stout playing in goal. And I think someone else is there. I think it might be Michaela Hahn.
Yeah, that's a club that always, at least in the past, or especially in the past couple of years, they're the ones that get kind of all the, our playoffs are kind of over. Hey, we have an opportunity to go play a couple Champions League games. Can we maybe scoot out right when the season's over and make it work? I'm going to bring up their roster right now. Yeah, just take a look at that. But that's interesting. Yeah, no, and that's not an easy match for Linköping as well because, I mean... Yeah, that's an ideal trip. You're going down to Cyprus. I mean, you want to make that trip because you get some lovely weather. But, yeah, they're always a bit of a gritty team. You're right with Michaela Hahn there, Libby Stout there.
I think Rossella Ayan, former Chelsea ladies player, is there as well.
Lara Roos, who was with Hjøring when they made a decent run. So yeah, there's a couple of players on here that could be that can make a difference. That's not going to be an easy tie for Linköping.
Well, it'll be interesting. Definitely one of the more interesting of the round. But yeah, as we said initially, Chelsea Bayern, without question, the tie of the round. I know that we're saying Chelsea got screwed. They did. But actually, you know what? There is every chance they go through. They did play in a pre-season friendly a few weeks ago, and Bayern Munich did come out on top in that one. So it'd be interesting to see if Chelsea over two legs can turn that one around. But yeah, looking forward to that one. I think it'll be interesting, obviously. Players like Crystal Dunn will be making their Champions League debuts. Interesting American matchup for our American listeners. Crystal Dunn coming up against Gina Lewandowski. So, yeah, looking forward to the Champions League. As I said, reminder, week beginning the 2nd of October and the 9th of October for the last 32, leg one and leg two. JJ, we will now have a break and then we'll come back and we'll have a little chat about the FAWSL and NWSL.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
Okay, welcome back. So, JJ, the FA Women's Super League season kicks off next week. Now, we are going to have some content going up at womenssoccerzone.com. We're arranging interviews as we speak with players from all of the 10 FAWSL1 clubs. So keep an eye out for them next week. But I think it's worth you and I having a bit of a chat about our thoughts ahead of the new season. Obviously, it's the first time the FAWSL will operate on an autumn, winter, spring cycle, going up against men's football, obviously running between September and May. Manchester City are the defending champions. Of course, Chelsea ladies won the spring series. There have been numerous moves that have taken place over the off-season. We've seen the likes of Paulina Bremer come into Manchester City. We've seen the likes of Lucy Bronze and Tony Duggan depart for pastures new. Arsenal have essentially overhauled half of the team with the likes of Viviana Miedema and Lisa Evans and Josephine Henning coming back. Chelsea have brought in players. Of course, they've brought in Magdalena Eriksson. They recently signed Norwegian international Maria Thorsdottir. You know, there are lots of moves taking place. Liverpool have made some moves as well. Everyone's made moves. We could go for a very, very big list. But I'm interested to know what your major talking point or major take is from the new season.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. I mean, this was, we talked last spring pretty much how that was just a 9-match dress rehearsal for a lot of teams, especially the teams in the bottom half. You know, your Yeovil Towns, Sunderland, how are they going to react after the club going from a full professional to semi-professional stature? Can Birmingham find goal scoring, which pretty much eluded them all of the previous full season as well as partially of the spring season? Can then Chelsea continue on their form? Will anybody catch City? I think those are a few of the main talking points. I mean, it's going to give us a pretty good example of what we're going to be seeing, I think, within the first couple of weeks of the season. I mean, that's a tasty kickoff match in its own right, similarly to how the men's Premier League started. WSL kicking off with Everton Liverpool at the Select Security Stadium. And I think that's going to be a litmus test for Everton because they've gone pretty much full professional. They've made added a lot of players coming into the season. Liverpool, obviously, I think their big knock is they saw Shannis van de Sanden after her great tournament, the Euros, she gets signed away. So how are they going to retool after that? Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. But yeah, there's a lot of things that are worth discussing. It's going to be a fun season, no doubt about it.
Who for you has the most pressure going into the new season? I think for me, it has to be Arsenal ladies. Again, big support for Pedro Losa from the board, giving him the resources to be able to mount a serious title challenge this season, or certainly mount a challenge for UEFA Women's Champions League football. We mentioned Viviana Miedema, Lisa Evans, Josie Henning. You know, the opportunity to retain the likes of Jordan Nobbs and Leah Williamson, Dan Carter. Obviously, they have our friend Heather O'Reilly playing for them as well. I mean, there's just talent from back to front, isn't there? There was a potential issue at the back, maybe being a little bit short. But as I said, re-signed Josephine Henning from Lyon, tied down Louise Quinn to a new contract. They've signed Jessica Samuelson as well. yes, the squad on paper looks incredibly strong, but with that, after a couple of disappointing years in the league, they now need to deliver, don't they?
Yeah, they do. You took Arsenal. I was going to say Arsenal, but I'll go with a different route here. I think City women probably have the most pressure. I mean, the last full season that they had, nearly unbeatable, world class all the way along, slipped up a little bit in the spring, obviously falling to Chelsea in the race for the cup, made it to the semifinals, of course, of the Champions League, but a couple of departures in there. Obviously, Tony Duggan gone, Kosta Aslani gone, Carly Lloyd gone after her short stint. Everybody else sort of reloaded a bit enough. Now, that's not to say that Manchester City didn't either. Couple of signings, Mia Jans now in the squad as well. They've made a few additions here, there, and everywhere. I'm curious to see how Mel Lawley gets on now with more confidence after a really good spring season. But yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure for them to replicate what they did, because all these other clubs, Arsenal, Chelsea, amongst others, Reading even as well, because they've made a fair amount of good signings. Did they catch them? I think that's going to be the big question for me.
Yeah, keep an eye on Claire Emsley as well for Man City women. Yep. You know, good player for Bristol City, had a good spring series, did well last year as well. I think she's going to be a big player for them. We already mentioned Paulina Bremer, of course, lost Lucy Bronze to Lyon, but still a lot of depth in there. I mean, the player that certainly gets a lot of recognition by fans and media, but has still yet to make an England squad, is Kira Walsh as well. I mean, that young individual playing in front of the City back four has been unbelievable since breaking into the first team, and I can only assume it's a matter of time before she breaks into the England squad. She is without question going to be a regular in Mark Sampson's setup going forward, and it's just a matter of time before she gets to that first call. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think City have pressure. The big clubs always have pressure, don't they? You know, Chelsea will have pressure. You know, they have to now try and follow on from what they achieved in the spring series. And I think what's key, and I was asked by Jen O'Neill of She Kicks magazine about the transfer window and how clubs had performed and who I felt had been the best club in terms of their acquisitions. And I actually said Chelsea, and it wasn't necessarily because of the signings that they made. It was the fact that they were able to keep pretty much everyone. They lost Niamh Fahey, who's gone to go and play in Bordeaux, and I think that's a really interesting move. But apart from that, they've pretty much kept everyone. They've added Maria Thorisdottir and Magdalena Eriksson, two really good internationals. You add that to what they already have from the spring series, the likes of Crystal Dunn, Ramona Backman, Enya Luko, Karen Carney, Katie Chapman, all these players, Millie Bright, who was superb in the Euros. There's pressure on them as well, because they have talent from back to front, and they now need to follow up on the spring series performances.
Yeah, agreed. And I think also, you know, we just talked about in our last segment about Champions League, you know, how much in the early goings are they going to be saving it perhaps for that competition, as opposed to maybe overlooking some of their early matches. I mean, Bristol City, that's their kickoff at their new digs. They're going to, Chelsea going to be playing at the King's Meadow this year, as opposed to Staines in years past. Their next match away to Sunderland, and then they follow, but then it's already getting to October. So yeah, so how much are they going to be looking maybe past those matches and then looking straight to Champions League? Because Bayern, that's a tough test. So if they slip, they're in trouble. But if they don't and they get through that Champions League test in flying colors, I think that'll set the tone of the rest of the league, that Chelsea, not to say that they're for real, but it just validates what everybody's expectations of them are.
Yeah, you mentioned there Bristol City. I think they've done some really good business, actually. I know that they're not going to be... Oh, actually, let's not be disrespectful. I know it's unlikely that they are going to be challenging those big three that we talk about quite often. But, you know, lost Claire Emsley, that is a blow. There's no question about that. But you look at the recruitment that they've done. Carla Humphrey coming in from Arsenal was a big coup. You know, I genuinely thought that Carla, after her loan spell at Doncaster Rovers Bells, might get an opportunity at Arsenal. But she's obviously been forced out because of the signings that the club has made. You know, the Belgian pair, Jana Daniels and Julie Biersmans. We spoke about Julie Biersmans on the last show, you know, when we spoke to Janice Kyman, she was raving about Julie Biersmans, and Bristol have been able to snag her. And I like what Willie Kirk's done at Bristol. You know, I think he's got a really strong core to that side, and he's got a nice mix of experience and youth in there. And I think that they will maybe surprise a few people this year. I think they've performed admirably in the spring series. They're not going to pull up any trees, as we would say over here, but I think they can perform to a good level, and I like the signings that they've made. I think the teams that probably worry me most, mate, and this probably won't come as a surprise to many people, is Sunderland and Yeovil. I look at how Yeovil performed in the spring series, and Jamie Sherwood is a good mate of mine in terms of people that we get on with in the women's game, and Jamie did a phenomenal job to get Yeovil into WSL1, but he needs resources, and Yeovil men's team play in the lower leagues of English football. You know, they play in League One, League Two, which is like the third or fourth tier of English football. They don't have the money to support him to be able to bring in the players that he needs to be able to compete with the likes of Chelsea, Arsenal, and even Bristol. And that makes it very difficult for him going into that new season. They have made signings, but I just wonder how difficult it's going to be for them.
Well, I've said it before, actually, and I do have this sort of odd tie with Yeovil Town. They have a goalkeeper, and as I've said before, and in speaking as a former goalkeeper, goalies can steal you a few wins. So I've said it before, Beth Howard is quality in net, played for my alma mater, Ryder, solid kid, solid fundamentals as well. She can maybe steal you a couple. But yeah, I can see where you are going forward, because I can look up and down the roster sheet. No real names that are going to be ones that are flying off at you. So yeah, I get where you're coming from. It's always going to be tough. I mean, look, we've said it before in the past where there's always been a tier, that tier one and tier two of teams. And I think the first tier has opened up maybe a little bit, but that gap between the two has gotten even bigger than where it was maybe 18 months ago. So yeah, it's going to be challenging for them. It's going to be interesting to see what also happens down the lower levels as well. And yeah, who knows? It could be a tough year, but then again, they could surprise you. They might get a couple of results early. It's not going to help that Yeovil's playing City home to begin the season. That's not going to do them any favors. The one that I think for me, and I know you've mentioned in the past before, especially with the plethora of signings that they've made, I want to hear your take. Where does Reading finish up in all of this?
I actually think you mentioned there's two tiers. I actually think there's three. I think you've got that top three who are pulling away that we've spoken about at length: Man City, Arsenal, Chelsea. You've then got a middle tier, which I think is probably Liverpool, Birmingham, and I think you put Reading in there as well. I think Reading, like you said, have made some really solid signings. Farrah Williams, incredibly experienced, England's record cap holder. She will bring stability to that midfield. And actually, when you look at their midfield, Joe Potter, Jade Moore, Farrah Williams, that is England's midfield, or three of England's midfield. So I like what Kelly Chambers has done. You know, they've got Mandy Vandenberg, who is having a break from the Dutch national team. So she's not going to be going away for international duty. She will be at Reading for the whole season without the interruption of international football. They've got, you know, the likes of Kirsty Lynette, who we're going to be speaking to, and we'll be up on the website next week for an interview that we're doing. You know, I like what they've done. I think they've made some shrewd signings, and we've spoken about the young players that they have there already. I think they have one of the best goalkeepers in the league in Mary Earps as well. Yeah, I think Reading fall into that middle bracket, mate. I think there's a three-tier league at the moment. Well, I want to go back to Sunderland, mate. We mentioned Sunderland there as a team that I'm a little bit concerned by. And the reason that I'm concerned is that earlier this week it was announced that the club will lose access to Sunderland Academy facilities where they've been training since they've been in the WSL. They will be moving to a new training facility that is further away. I believe it's closer to Newcastle from what I saw in an article on The Guardian. They're also going to be having a new home stadium as well. They've been playing at the Heaton Centre for a few years, and they're going to be moving to a new stadium in South Shields, which is kind of in the middle of both Sunderland and Newcastle. I don't know how this affects them in terms of moving forward. Obviously, there was a lot of publicity about Sunderland going part-time. I believe that a few of the players are still training full-time. So it's not completely part-time, as some, I believe, were led to believe. But yeah, I'm just kind of a bit concerned about them because I don't know how much depth they've got. They've signed Rachel Laws back from Durham, the goalkeeper, who I think is excellent. You know, Rachel has been on the cusp of England squads in the past. She's made a few England squads as well. But I just wonder how they compete with that middle bracket. At the moment, I probably put them in the bottom bracket, but I wonder how they compete with the middle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you do make a fair point about splitting up the three. I was just making it a little bit more of a broader scheme of the teams that have really invested and made moves versus the teams that haven't and will struggle. But yeah, it you're right. It's going to be a fight for them to stay up this year. You know, they're going to have to take the matches that they can and try to get the most out of them. And we're going to see some matches that could go rather ugly as to what we saw in the spring. I think, you know, you're right in the whole sense that a lot of what happened in their spring series last year is very overshadowed by what happened with them going into a majority of non-full-time players. The move isn't going to help them either. I mean, that just kind of shows maybe more so for Sunderland. Probably one would have to think because they've dropped out of the Premier League on the men's side. So who knows how much that's going to come out of it. But yeah, it's going to be tough for them. I don't think there's any two questions about it. I'm not going to say they're going to be lucky to finish mid-table, but they're going to have to really punch above their weight to get results against teams like Everton, like Bristol City, like Reading, just to finish in that respectability mode.
Yeah, I think, you know, I would agree with that. I think that I hope they do well. You know, really good club, Sunderland. You know, they were so good when they were playing outside the WSL. They had a very good first season in WSL as well, obviously finished in the top four. They didn't do too badly in the spring series. They did compete. I mean, I watched the first game of the spring series when they hosted Arsenal, and it was a 0-0 draw, and they certainly didn't disgrace themselves. So hopefully they can be competitive, and hopefully the move doesn't disrupt them too much. Everton ladies have made a number of signings. I look at them as a team that potentially is somewhere between the second and third bracket. You know, it depends on how quickly those signings settle in. Signed a couple of Dutch internationals. You know, I'm not quite sure. I watched Everton at Arsenal a couple of weeks ago, and the first half, Everton were completely outplayed by Arsenal. You know, they completely overran them. But second half, they were more competitive, but Arsenal did take their foot off the gas a little bit. So I'm not quite sure about Everton. And the other two clubs that we haven't really mentioned are Birmingham and Liverpool. You know, Birmingham have, again, managed to retain the majority of their squad from the spring series. I saw them in the spring series. At times, they were brilliant. I watched them at home to Liverpool, and they were, I'll be honest with you, incredibly poor. I saw them in the Women's FA Cup final against Man City. They were completely overawed by the occasion and really never got going. They lost 4-1 in that game. And Liverpool, you mentioned it earlier, you know, lost Shanice van der Sanden, you know, but again managed to retain the majority of the squad. Katie Zellum has gone to Juventus. Katie was one of those players that I thought might be able to be a bit of a difference maker. I know she came to Liverpool with a big reputation, but never quite worked out for Katie in Liverpool. Very, very talented, no question. And I think she could end up being a bit of a loss and a big gain for Juventus. But yeah, I don't know. What's your view on Birmingham and Liverpool, mate? Because I'm kind of indifferent on them at the moment.
Yeah, same. I said at the beginning of this segment that Birmingham needed to find players to get goals. I mean, Ellen White, obviously, you know, she is a goal scorer, but can she get the service that's required for her to be successful? They can stop them. That's not really ever been a question. I think, you know, you're right in that match with the FA Cup final. They were over, you know, odd with playing in Wembley, playing in front against Manchester City and all the crowd that they had. That was a tough one for them. That won't truly define who they are. But yeah, goals I think are going to be an issue. And I think you hit it right on the head with Liverpool and Katie Zellum. I know you spoke in the past that, you know, she could be one of the next big players to come. And for her, I mean, it's a good move for her. I mean, it's an opportunity to go to pretty much a brand new club and, you know, make your play going to be without, you know, obviously continental football, at least for a year. But with Liverpool, you always had at least a chance and you had some good talent around you. But I think between her and Van de Sande and Gaughan, I also think that there are going to be times that they're going to struggle to really get a lot of attacking play and keep it consistently throughout the year.
Yeah, I think they could potentially do need a couple more faces, if I'm honest with you. I think that there may be the loss of Van der Sanden and Zellum could hurt them a little bit. I think that's two big players that they've potentially lost. But yeah, interesting to see. And with Birmingham, I like what Birmingham do. I think they're very good at bringing through their own. I think they have some very talented individuals. We've raved about Aoife Mannion on this show numerous times, a bit like what I was saying with Kira Walsh. I think it's only a matter of time before Aoife Mannion breaks into the England squad. She's incredibly talented, and they have some experienced internationals, Anne Katrin Berger, Andrina Hegerberg. You know, they have Ellen White as well, as you mentioned. I like what they've got. I'm just not sure it's quite enough to break into that top bracket that we've mentioned. But, you know, FAWSL is exciting. It's going to be different this year. It's going to be interesting to see how players cope with going back to the more traditional season. As I said, we will have player interviews going up on womenssoccerzone.com next week, so please do keep an eye out for that. JJ, we'll have a short break and then we'll come back and we'll round up with the NWSL.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So, JJ, NWSL is into the final couple of weeks before we head into the postseason. We now know who two teams are who are going to be hosting the two playoff matches, North Carolina Courage and the Portland Thorns. Comes as no surprise, really, the way the North Carolina Courage have been playing. Hugely consistent. The Portland Thorns have managed to find results when it's mattered. It's now going to be two spots up for grabs with three clubs fighting and still able to claim them. Chicago Red Stars, Orlando Pride and the Seattle Reign, who are very much the outsiders. What's your take on the last few weeks in the NWSL?
Well, I think the real big match, and for, you know, a lack of better terms, for once lifetime, selected the right game to show as their match of the week, coming up on the 23rd. Remember, by the way, the U.S. will be in action for a pair of matches against New Zealand, so we won't have action until the 23rd. But Pride against the Thorns in Orlando, that could very well be a preview of the semifinal that would be returned up in Portland. I think the Pride at this point, this is a golden chance for them to make a statement here. We said it from the beginning, especially when they signed Marta, that they're going for it this year. Obviously, with the final being played at their digs, an opportunity to play in front of their fans, you know, sleep in your own bed the night before a cup final, they have to win this match. I think for them to really make a statement against Portland, who's been there the past couple of years, getting to the playoffs, that's going to be a good one. Yeah. And also, you said Seattle, the outliers. They could actually know by the time that their next match comes about against FC KC on the 24th that they might not be playing for anything more than just Pride. I think, you know, injuries have hurt them at times. Inconsistent form at others has hurt them. Seattle, it's been a bit of a hard fall since Kim Little has left. Not to say that she was the sole reason why they got into the championship for 2 years running. But, yeah, it's been difficult for Laura Harvey to really get back going. There have been some good times, not to say that there haven't been good times. But, it's challenging for them. And I think the playoff picture, if he told me at the end of Saturday, September 23rd, that it's going to be North Carolina, Portland, Chicago, Orlando, I'd say, yep, that's pretty much about right. And that also could very well be what the playoff picture, the playoff matchups would look like as well.
Yeah, it's difficult to disagree. I think Seattle going into the next round of games is 5 points behind Chicago and Orlando, and it makes it very difficult with only two games remaining to really see them overturning that deficit. I think a few key results haven't gone their way, have they? They're probably just going to come up a little bit short, and I think it will be I think obviously North Carolina are going to top the table. Portland second. I think it's probably going to be, I think Orlando might sneak into third. I think we might see Chicago in fourth. I think you're right. I think we might see Portland against Orlando and North Carolina against Chicago in the two playoff semifinals. But it'll be interesting to see. Obviously the final takes place in Orlando on October the 14th. So I'm sure Orlando will be doing everything they can to make sure that they are going to be what would essentially be the home team in that playoff final. And if they can get there, boy, does it make them favourites, even if it is against someone like North Carolina with that crowd behind them. But really, really exciting to see. You know, we can talk about the playoff picture all we like, mate. I think, you know, it's pretty straightforward as it is at the moment. I wouldn't say there's a huge number of talking points outside of that. Obviously, we've seen, you know, some clubs, I think, for me, maybe not show as much potential as maybe we thought they could at the beginning of the season. But, yeah, I think for me, the biggest talking point over the last few days was the Houston Dash's decision. They are going to be playing their final game of the season, or their final home game of the season, in Edinburgh in Texas, 5 hours away from Houston. Obviously, this comes as a result of the rescheduling of the game against the North Carolina Courage after the devastation of Hurricane Harvey. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because it's a long way from home. It's the final home game of the season. You look on social media, Dash fans aren't happy, are they?
No, they're not. You know, this is one of those moments right here that you have to look at this at two pictures and almost kind of debate this almost. If you're a fan of Houston, life has been pretty hard. There's no two ways about it. I mean, you are obviously had to deal with the hurricane and the recovery, one of two you know, natural disasters that have hit the United States really in the matter of weeks. I mean, you also have to feel for all the people, not only just in the state of Florida, but also the entire Southeast as well through Hurricane Irma. So these are those moments where you're looking for just like a little bit of a, you know, let's just forget about things for a little while and, let's go enjoy a match. And now all of a sudden you find out you got to go play 5 hours. You're going to a match 5 hours away from your home. That sucks. I mean, there's no two ways about it. If I was a season ticket holder and you hear that, you're like, well, what do I do now? I mean, the Dallas trip, that was tough enough because that's a few hours north, but at least, it could be manageable. But now, to go to Edinburgh, Texas, which is basically on the border of Mexico, all the way at the most southern point of the state, yeah, it's a tough ask. But now I'm going to go and switch to the other hat. So, for people who don't know, the stadium that they're going to be playing in is home of Rio Grande Valley FC, which is it's the affiliate club in the USL, which is the lower division in men's American professional soccer, of the Houston Dynamo. Pretty much a brand spanking new facility, just about 10,000 seats. It's a very nice facility as well. And actually, what I've understood by people in and around that league is a lot of people like playing at that facility. They get good crowds down there. And I can understand where Chris Kennedy, in the front office of the Dash and Dynamo, said this is an opportunity to maybe expand the brand a little bit of the Dash, and I see no issue with that whatsoever. I mean, does it come in a not ideal landscape? Yeah, it does, but you have to try and make the best of it. And I know a lot of fans were grasping at the idea of, well, let's go play Texas A&M, let's go play at Rice University, let's go play the handful of university fields within that area. I can understand where that could be feasible, and maybe some avenues were looked at a little more highly as opposed to others, but long story short, I'm not upset with the decision that the Dash made, but I can understand where people are having a bit of a qualm about it.
You're not upset because you don't have to make the drive, mate. Five hours? Mate, I live in London. 5 hour drive gets me to Newcastle. 5 hour train ride gets me to Scotland. It's like, that is crazy, like absolutely crazy. I cannot get my head around that one. I know you guys live in a big country. I know that Texas is absolutely enormous. Obviously, I made the trip over there last year. 5 hours, man. I mean, seriously, that is a road game. That is not a home game at all. But yeah, crazy, crazy decision. I do not understand that one at all. And as for getting the brand out there, yeah, absolutely fine. Yes, you're opening it up to a new market, but how many people in that market are going to travel 5 hours to Houston to go and watch a Dash game? Maybe they'll do one a season. Maybe they'll buy a little bit of merchandise. I don't know. I think it's,
one of those where you play a preseason match there. I understand that one.
Yeah, I know you're not defending it. You're just doing the right thing by giving a balanced argument as to why it works and why it doesn't work. I'm just not balancing it out, mate. For me, it's ridiculous. But, you know, I really like the Dash organization. I think they've got some really good people working there, and I'm not criticizing them, you know, for this. It's just, I know they've probably explored all the possible opportunities, but I just, yeah, you can tell by me mixing my words up. It's it's one that I can't really quite get my head around. I feel for the Dash fans, I feel for the Carolina fans who were probably planning to go to Houston, but there you go, it happens. That, my friend, probably rounds it up, I think. So yeah,
I think we covered it all.
Yeah, I think we have. There's other stuff that we probably could have covered off, but we've been going nearly an hour, and I think we need to close the show. So as always, people, thank you so much for tuning in. We always appreciate your time. If you wish to follow us on Twitter, you can do. We're on @WosoZone. Of course, we have the website, womenssoccerzone.com. You can find our podcast. You can find our features. You can find our interviews. As I mentioned, we're going to have FAWSL content going up next week. We will continue to put as much up as we can with the time that we have allowed. And of course, if you want to listen to the show, you can do it at womenssoccerzone.com. You can do it at audioboom.com as well. And of course, you can download us on iTunes. Now, normally we would have our normal outro, but doing things a little bit differently for this show, I've never done this in 4.5 years. We don't have adverts on this program, but I did promote it on social media. A friend of mine who used to intern at my company has just released her first single. She is based in Tennessee, and she has allowed us to play it to close this show. I would advise anyone who wishes to have a listen after this show to go onto Spotify, search for Ellis, which is E-L-L-I-S, and the name of the track is OK in the Morning. The name of the track is OK in the Morning. So get over to Spotify. Ellis is going to play us out. Thanks as always for tuning in. Until next time, bye-bye.
You're so selfish. No, you don't mean it. But you're the reason stop leaving. I'm waiting for you to open your mouth. I'm waiting for you to just let it out. I won't forget this, and I can't help it, but I keep drinking to hide the feeling. Open a bottle up, still see your face in the dress.